Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pagans Tonight Radio Network, the voice of the pagan world. Pagans Tonight is sponsored by Witchschool.com, your anyone, anytime, anywhere magical education.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in today. I am Michael Graywolf, artist, traveler, all-around geek, witch, and brother initiate of the Unnamed Path. And I have a special guest host with me right now. Matthew is currently taking a little break. Life catches up with us, and we have to take time for ourselves, get everything in order. So while Matthew is taking this well-deserved time off, our dear brother, Chase, who has been on the show a couple of times, has volunteered to be my co-host while Matthew is away. And I believe I have you on the air. Is that you, Chase?
You do indeed.
So we have had you on the show before, but why don't you give us a little introduction of who you are, Chase?
Hi. I am also an initiate of the Unnamed Path, clearly. Grey Wolf is always so kind to call me dear brother. I am a shaman and a sorcerer and a witch and a warlock and all of those things, whatever gets you there. I do lots of magic, and in my spare time fight with people on the internet about social justice stuff.
Awesome. So much fun already. Everyone, you are listening to Walking the Unnamed Path. This is a podcast where we discuss the teachings and techniques given to us by the ancestors of Men Who Love Men and laid out by our late dear founder, Hyperion. We also touch on topics and ideas pertaining to queer pagan men in general. We're glad you've decided to join us today. I know there might be a few people who were like, do I go to the march? Do I listen to the radio show? Maybe I can do both. I didn't realize there was a march going on today here in Dallas where I am. But sending them all well wishes and whatnot. But for those of you who have tuned in and decided to join us today, if you'd like to be part of the show, you can always call in at area code 347-308-8222. You can hang out in the chat room, which I will see if I can get open. Maybe it worked. I've been having issues with the chat room. I don't know. Maybe it's just my computer or it's me. We'll see. Or you can always drop us an email at walkingunnamedpath@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at walking_DUP, or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/walkingunnamedpath. Now, today's episode, we will be talking with our fellow brother initiate, David Shorey, who has been on the show quite a few times before, and he has graciously volunteered to come on and talk with us. Talk with us about his experiences as being a gay man, who is HIV positive, and its effect, if any, it's had on his magical practices. And let me go ahead and bring David on, if my mouse will work. Technology. I don't want to blame
Mercury. Pearl, it's a Mercury retrograde right now.
Yeah. Welcome, David, to the show.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
Greetings.
pardon the background noise. I'm actually walking somewhere, and there's a nice little puppy who's deciding he's going to say hi to me. So, hi, little puppy.
I would first like to say thank you, David, for coming on the show and volunteering to be so open with us about talking with us about being very positive and magic. And before we continue, please feel free to let us know if any question that we ask or topic is too sensitive to answer for you. I've never actually talked about that before, about your interview status before, but you have mentioned it a few times on the show.
Well, I've been able to talk about this in a that's not me. I've been able to talk about this in front of classes and community groups, so I'm comfortable having this discussion. It's the first time I've talked about it on the radio, but, you know, this is the first time for everything, right?
Yeah, that's true. Now, David, would you mind sharing with us, when did you find out you were HIV positive? And what was that like for you?
Well, so I guess to put it in context, I came out later in life. I came out when I was 24, 25, which, you know, some people come out right when they're out of the womb. But for me, it took till I was 25, around 25, to really come to terms with that. And I was, you know, an individual who had no clue really what it meant to be gay. I kind of grew up not with a lot of gay folks around me. And so my experience was just going to the bars, going to different venues. And so at one point, you know, I hooked up with someone, and the experience was awkward, for lack of a better term. And I wasn't really sure what was going on, and the guy was acting weird. And so finally I just decided, okay, I was done. And so went home, and then about 2 weeks later I got really, really sick. And I didn't put two and two together.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't have health insurance at the time, and I wasn't in college, so I couldn't go to the school clinic. And so I went to one of those clinics, you know, those not hospital, but the just random clinics, and they took some blood, and they're like, oh, your white blood cell count is really high. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? They're like, well, have you had an HIV test before? And I'm like, no. And they said, well, you don't want to do it here because it's going to be really expensive. Go to your county health clinic. So mm-hmm. I went to the county health clinic, took a test. It was an anonymous test. They give you a little number. And then I proceeded to lose the number. And a few weeks went by, and then a month went by, and I finally was like, okay, I have to do this. And so in December of 1999, I got tested. And then on December 23rd, 1999, I got my results back that said that I was HIV positive. And it was a very interesting situation because immediately the nurse who told me started to break down and cry. And I ended up kind of having to counsel her, saying, I'm going to be okay. It's going to be fine. And so it was just a surreal experience all around. It was one of those situations where I kind of knew right away after having been exposed, but it didn't get confirmed until obviously I went through the steps of doing it.
So I'm trying to do the math in my head. So you've been HIV positive for
almost 20 years, about 19 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's going to be like almost 20. Wow. Mm. how I'm trying to formulate words and it's a little difficult. When you found out you were positive, how long did it take you, really to, did you go through the process that I've heard about where, it's basically like a grieving process. You grieve and you try to move on with your life.
Well, it was interesting because after I was diagnosed, the place where I was working, one of my coworkers, she's like, "Are you okay? What's going on?" She's like, "You've been acting weird lately." And I was, I'm like, just got some interesting news. And she's like, "Well, how can I help?" And I told her, this is what I found out. And she's like, "Okay, all right. Well, I want you to talk to someone. I want you to talk to my sister." And so her sister and I had lunch, and she let me know that she was HIV positive. And I will always remember what she said, because it's the same thing that I tell people all the time, which is you can either be HIV positive David Shorey, or you can be David Shorey with HIV, where one, the HIV is the first focus. The second is you're the focus and you're living with the condition. And so, I'm really lucky in that I was diagnosed at a time when there was better treatment. There are hundreds of thousands of our fellow men who love men and just people in general, millions of people around the world who did not have access to healthcare. And so was there a period of depression? There was. I mean, any kind of major change, any kind of thing where it could potentially or does affect your feelings of self-worth. I'm dirty. I'm unlovable. I'm not something that is valuable. And so you process those things. But the conversation I had with my coworker's sister really helped put things in perspective for me, that while it may be the case that I have this condition, I don't have to let that dictate everything that I do in my life. There are certain things that I have to be mindful of, but there are certain things that everyone everyone has to be mindful of. So when I go through a situation where something like this pops up, I always have to remind myself of the perspective of, how does this fit in with my life? What are the things that I need to do, both physically, spiritually, but also, where do I want this to take me? And I early on decided that I was going to continue my life as long as I could, not living like I didn't have the condition, but living like it didn't matter that I had the condition. And not meaning I didn't get treatment it's just, if I wanted to go out and have sushi, I was going to eat sushi. If I wanted to go and, eat something that, or do something that would stress my immune system, I was mindful of that. And, so it's about balance. It's about perspective. It's about really narrowing in on your own body and what your body tells you, has being HIV affected my energy levels? Of course it has. Has it affected me in terms of, you know, certain decisions I make around sex? Yes, of course it has. But I couldn't see myself going through life with this perspective that I need to put, you know, padding on everything that I deal with, that I can't, I kind of, it's like the image of the boy in the bubble that I can't put this huge bubble around me to make myself as safe and protected as possible, because if I do that, you know, what I'm doing is I'm shutting out the world, and there's better ways of me living my life than shutting out the world. Do you have any questions for me, Chase?
Yes.
So, aside from chiming in with here on the not putting yourself in a bubble, so have you noticed in particular any changes as you've learned to navigate in the world with the pagan community in general, with the way that they either treat you or the way that they interact with you when and if they find out or when and if you come out to them as being HIV positive?
I think the short answer is no, I've not. The reason I say that is it's really the experience that I've had with folks who are pagan, at least the folks that I've hung out with, has always been caring and loving and understanding. But I choose my friends wisely. So maybe I'm lucky in that I've chosen really good friends. I would say that you know, the topic of this show about how has HIV influenced my magical practice, or you know, me as a spiritual person. There is always, without a doubt, a connection that you, at least that my experience and my observation has been that when someone experiences something that can be life-threatening, there's always a moment of spiritual connection, whether it's, oh God, am I going to die? Or, oh, how does this change, you know, my connection with the universe, or my relationship with my fellow people. And you know, I thought about this because I was asking, how has being HIV like changed what I do and how I do it at a spiritual level? And I guess I would say it hasn't, but what it has done is allowed me to appreciate I think a more intimate level, the full cycle of life. So, you know, birth, life, and death. And to not have a perspective that life is not going to end, because I know life is going to end, and I know that I'm at some points can be more of a risk of getting there, but at the same time, it's not something that is really going to be for me a really strong focus. I'm going to live my life. I'm going to die when I die, and all will be well. But I need to also appreciate the fact that death does happen. So, it's, So it's the effect it has had has just been to allow me to get the full perspective of everything.
Mm-hmm. You know, to kind of expand a little bit on the question that Chase asked, in our present day, the way that we view being HIV positive has changed quite a bit from mm-hmm. when it first impacted our community. When that first hit our community, it was, oh my God, it's a death sentence, I'm going to die. But, with advances in medicine and technology, people who are HIV positive are leading long, healthy, productive, happy lives.
Right.
Chase had asked about the patient community, what has been your experience when you interact with people in just like the gay and queer community, when and if, they find out you're HIV positive or you disclose that to them?
Yeah. Some people I've had people who I've met who are, oh, you're the first person who I know who's HIV positive. We have conversations about what does that mean? What it comes out is that, well, I guess there's other folks who may have been, but they just didn't tell me. You're the first person to tell me. Then I'm happy to be the question person. Well, what about this or what about that? And I can say that, well, from my experience, X, Y, and Z. But I've not ever really had, I've thought about this, I've not really had an experience where someone's been like, oh, you're HIV positive, I'm just going to push you away. Even mm-hmm. with one of my early boyfriends, after I was diagnosed, I was very hesitant to tell him at first. And I remember, we were dating, we hadn't had sex yet, and we were heading in that direction. And I was like, I have to tell you this. And I did. And he's like, okay, well, that just means that we can do a lot of things. There's just certain things we can't do. And that was the end of the conversation. I think that, I am also very constantly cognizant of the fact that I'm very lucky and that, 20 years before, well, 10 years before I was diagnosed, there were people who were still dying without any help, who were ostracized from their families, who were people who were just not supported by the community, and even the community, the GLBT community. So we have come a long way in the last 40 years in terms of where we are with HIV and where we are with our vision and our compassion around the condition.
Yeah, very much so. To get a little bit more into the magical side of stuff, I know you already told us a little bit about you don't really think it's affected your magical practices much. Part of what we do in the Unnamed Path, for those who don't know, who are listening, we do a lot of shadow work, especially mm-hmm. when we are going through our initiation process or through our apprenticeship process leading up to initiation. And it's something that we learn that we are going to constantly have to be doing, throughout our lives in order to be, good magical practitioner, to be, good shaman. Would, I feel like this might be something we should talk about more in our brotherhood, but would you say, would being HIV positive be one of your biggest shadows, or is it a shadow that you work with regularly?
I would say that it's a shadow that is part of a larger shadow. my main shadow is feelings of self-worth and inadequacy and the I'm not enough and I'm not worthy and obviously having a medical condition that is directly connected with your not only your sexuality but sex in general. It's something that it ties into that. Well, I can blame this for this, or I can say it's because I'm HIV positive that I'm not lovable, or it's HIV positive that I'm not, people don't want to have sex with me, but I also have feelings of self-worth because I don't think I look good enough, or I don't think I am smart enough, or, all the things that you tell yourselves to kind of validate a certain shadow, or that your shadow itself tells you. So have I used the HIV as a means of berating myself? Of course I have. I can't lie about that. But it's something that I have to, as with everything else, I have to be like, okay, so is that true? Where is that coming from? Why do I say that? And what does that mean? And then look at, other folks who live every day, with the same condition and don't have the same issues that I do. So it's a situation where I just have to be very mindful of how I utilize that tool. Because it's, tools are something that you use to accomplish your purpose. And so if I want to beat myself up, or if I want to berate myself about something in particular, then I can use that tool. I can decide to use that tool. It can be an effective tool. It can be a not effective tool, but it's a tool nonetheless. So if I choose to pick up that tool and hit myself over the head with it, then I'm the one that's making that choice to do that. If I decide to go, okay, this is not a tool I want to use, or if I'm called to use that tool, be like, okay, so why do I want to use it? Is this a good tool to use at this time, or is there a better tool?
That's a really interesting perspective. I've never thought of something like that way before.
Yeah,
And we do it. We all do it, and I don't want to diminish. There are people who are living every day with this condition, who struggle. People. I could spend hours on talking about the fact that people. There's a lot of belief by even the younger generations that HIV is just you just take a pill and you're fine and everything will be fine. And for some people, that's true. I happen to be very lucky in that I've not had side effects from my medication for most of the medication I've taken, I should say. But there are people who take medication and it just doesn't work. There's people who get diagnosed and they're like, oh, okay, well, I've got some time to deal with this. And 3 weeks later, they're dead because their immune system just wasn't, you know, they were run down and the HIV took over and further decimated their immune system, and then they got an infection and they were dead. There are people who just, because of the way that healthcare is in this situation, don't have access to healthcare where they're given medication or they're given treatment or they have the opportunity to have support that they need, both at a medical but also a social level. This condition is not over. It will not be over until there is either a full cure or, it's been, for lack of a better term, bred out of existence. In that, you know, we have, PrEP goes a long way to doing that, and I'm full supporter of PrEP. But I really want anyone who's young to really think about, you know, the impact that that this condition makes on their lives. And you know, it's not cheap. I mean, I'm very lucky that I have health care, but, you know, it's going to the doctors every 3 to 4 months to get your blood drawn and getting poked, you know, by 4 to 5 vials of blood, and making sure that your prescription is renewed, and making sure that if you're on any drug assistance programs, that your paperwork gets turned in and that your health premium gets paid. And, you know, are you eating well? Are you drinking enough water? Are you doing what you need to do? All those things that everyone else faces, but we have to face, you know, we have to go to the doctor, we have to get our blood drawn, we have to go and take medication. In many ways, you know, it's funny because this just popped in my mind, talking about spiritual practice, those kind of activities become a ritual. It's a ritual for folks to affirm their life, to affirm that they're taking steps to continue on and carry on. And so realized that it's also, you know, when I give blood, I'm doing a sacrifice. And that, yes, that sacrifice is for the testing, but it's also in a way a sacrifice for me to continue on to carry on with my life. So I withdraw what I said earlier, and I actually say, yes, it does have an effect on me as a spiritual level, just in a way that I hadn't yet realized until I started talking about it.
Well, I don't think I've really heard that described in such a way.
I hadn't thought about it either.
To back up a little bit, when you called it a tool earlier, have in your experiences with the ancestors of men who have men, or with the gods or goddesses, have they given you any particular lessons around this tool? And if so, can you share them with us?
That's a good question. Because there are so many ancestors who have died because of this disease, specifically of men who love men, I think that the lesson that I've learned from them in terms of using it as a tool is to be an example and to be a resource. That for many of them, the diagnosis was not a diagnosis. It was a death call. And immediately there was this kind of retreat that occurred of their friends, of people around them, of, you know, it was many of our those in the 80s and early 90s and mid 90s, it was the lesbian community that really stepped up to take care of the dying, those dying from HIV in many of the big cities, because one, other gay men were, you know, they didn't know what was going on in the very beginning, and it was, I don't know if I can be around that person. So if anything, what I've been told is, you know, you're going to have the opportunity to have an impact on folks unlike we've had. So use that tool. Use that as a means of talking about not just how to take care of yourself, but talk about things like self-worth. There are many, many stories, including my own, where I put myself in situations that were not safe, were not healthy, because of feelings of lack of self-worth and self-esteem. And so if I can be an example and talk to folks and be a resource for folks to be able to say, you are okay, you are enough, you are lovable, you are worthy, you don't have to go out and sleep with everyone just to prove that. You don't have to go and do dangerous behavior just to prove that. You being here is innately testimony, innately testimony to your worth and value. And so that's the message that I think I've gotten from them, just to be the resource that they couldn't be because they, one, didn't know what was going on really. Two, once they did, it was too late. And three, that people just didn't want to be around them, in the initial period. And to also the fact that I've had, I'm kind of in this bridge generation from the late 90s when medication first started happening to today when, you know, everyone hopefully is using PrEP or at least aware of what's going on. And so there's this kind of period in between where I'm not of the generation that was losing friends left and right, but I'm now not of the generation where we're getting less and less diagnoses because of the opportunities that things like PrEP provide.
That's a little funny because my next question was going to be, in your journey to the underworld, around the Sacred Bonfire, have you ever interacted with any of the ancestors of Men Who Love Men who were HIV positive?
Yeah, in all of my spiritual practices where I interact with ancestors, I do because they're there. I mean, it's obviously from a spiritual perspective, it really doesn't matter what medical, physical condition they had because they're there at a spiritual level. But from an emotional level, there's a lot of heartbreak. There's a lot of, that feeling of loss, that feeling of experiences cut too short. The feeling of what could have been, it's still a thread that does weave through the conversations that the experiences that I've had. Now, as I said, at a spiritual level, it's like, okay, well, that was the experience I had in my physical existence, and here I am in my spiritual existence, and we go on from there. I think that the melancholy, the sacred melancholy that exists of looking back to all the people that we lost, all the individuals that could have had such an amazing impact on our society, that could have changed things or enlightened us in a way that didn't happen, I think is, you know, there's moments of continued grief over that. There's also moments of wanting to, fighting to not let it happen again, and to, you know, to put things in place that allow folks to have the support that they need. You know, in the early times, you know, we had a political system that just didn't want to acknowledge the fact that this condition existed. Or if it did, it only affected gay men. And, you know, then there's other folks who come from a spiritual level who say, well, this is God's wrath against us for being the bad people that we are. But what I've experienced with the ancestors is that, you know, that perspective is, it's a very human perspective. It's a very ego-driven, a very fear-based perspective. And part of our continued role is to continue to do work that not only shifts that perspective, but changes people's hearts and changes people's minds. And the easiest way that I've seen to do that, it's also one of the toughest, is to do it one-on-one and to have those individual conversations with people. There are people who are so afraid of their own selves, so afraid of, you know, the fear of death, that they're not going to open their minds, and they're going to continue to have this perspective of a them versus us. But I think as a good majority of people, however, will have the opportunity, if they can, to get to know someone, to see that you know, we're all human, we're all flawed in many ways, and we're all perfect in many ways. And part of this journey that we take on this planet and in our physical forms is to work all that out. So it's really, I don't at all get a feeling of resentment, I think. It's more of a sacred melancholy, more of a, you know, here is where we are now, and we're dancing around the bonfire. But gosh, it would have been really nice to have another night on Fire Island, or another, you know, dance on here and there, and be able to do that with folks in a physical existence.
So I've talked about this in the past before with my coming out experience. One of the big things that was such a terror for the people in my life when I came out in super, super small town Texas was basically the way that it's thought of is that, you know, when you're gay, you get AIDS and you die. And that's just all there is to it, which is a really, it's especially for people
who are in that kind of small, you know, in that small town mentality, or who grow up in that kind of an environment, who don't have the benefit or the luxury of being in or even near a larger town, you get that stigma. Mm-hmm. And I know I, even in my early days of figuring out who I was as a, you know, a newly minted gaby, trying to figure out my feelings around people with HIV,
mm-hmm.
and understanding, you know, the actual truth of things as opposed to what the, you know, abstinence-only, heavily Christianized education system wanted us to believe. And mm-hmm. I know I've had, I have had and continue to have close friendships now with people who are HIV positive, who either I didn't know when we became friends, or, you know, in whatever that way, however that worked out. How would you say, what would you say for people who, especially in our community, are either struggling with their own status or who are struggling to, relate, I guess, to people?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would say that, you know, it, like I said earlier, it is hard in that you're like, okay, I've got this condition. Does that make me, you know, do I talk to my friends? Do I tell my family? Do I, what do I do? And, if you, there are probably more people around you that are HIV positive than you realize. If you are in a situation where you're in an environment where you don't have the support that you need, there are online resources, there are phone resources to reach out. You know, and if you don't have those, you don't know how to access those, then you can reach out to me, and I'm gonna, you know, I'll give my email address and my phone number to anyone who would like it. You just gotta, we'll figure out a way to make that connection. But I am happy to be a resource too. Like I said at the beginning, I'm very lucky in how I grew up. And how I, you know, I live in California, and there's, if there's any state that it's been most supportive of folks dealing with HIV/AIDS, it's California. So I count my blessings for that every day. I know that other states, other countries, you don't have those kinds of resources, but don't let it. Don't let it eat you up, and, you know, don't, I'm not going to give advice for, I guess the advice that I'm going to give for you to disclose is to do it in a way that is safe and comfortable for you to do. So if you feel like you can tell your family and you feel like they'll be supportive, then I would encourage you to do that. If you have friends that can be supportive, I would tell you to do that as well. Realize that when you tell someone, you know, obviously, you're afraid to do it, but there's going to be an aspect of confusion. There's going to be an aspect of fear, of the unknown, and also fear of what does this mean? Where you know, are you going to die tomorrow? Even though there's no proof that it's going to happen, but there's these fears that rise up. So I would say don't let those fears, however, keep you from getting resources and support that you need. And if it's not around you, then reach out to other places, and really work to build a support system. Work to build, even if it's just one person that you can just talk with. Utilize that, and don't let yourself sit at home and be alone, and build those feelings of, this is the end. No one's going to love me. No one's going to want to be around me, because I can tell you that that's not the case. I can promise you that that's not the case.
We have looks like about 10 minutes left to the show, and I have a couple of questions for you. I'll ask one of them first, because I want to get your answer on this one, and if we get to the other one, it might be a good segue into an announcement later. our tradition is a path for men who have met. We are shamans for our community. What do you think could be some ways that we, as brothers of the Unnamed Path, can, be there for those in our community who are HIV positive, or who, like Trace was talking about earlier, who are struggling to come to terms with the idea of, getting to know someone who's HIV positive, or who is, are you understanding what, I'm asking?
Yeah, no, I do. I think that as a tradition, we have a good opportunity for, because of the work that we do, to not only work with folks who are struggling with these issues, these questions, but also make connections with the spirit world, and do some of the the untangling of the some of the ancestral threads that where this kind of I talked about the folks in the spirit world saying, well, it's a condition of the physical world, but at the same time, there's still kind of these ancestral energy threads that kind of, they're almost like knots of energy that, at least my experience, this is my experience, knots of energy that maybe serve as an impasse between having a connection between the physical world and the spiritual world. And some of those revolve around trauma. And certainly the aspect of having HIV and the death trauma and the social trauma that surrounded that was really significant. For us in the physical world, I talked earlier about there was a question about shadow work, and I think that we as the spirit workers that we are can go into the community and do some of that shadow work, have these conversations, be open about what it is, and be resources for folks to do spiritual work to help them come to their own place in what it means to have HIV, what it means to how it affects their lives. And then when the time comes, we also, as our death walking, we need to be there for those who are going to pass on and be resources for them, but also use those same skills to work with the living to show them that, death is just part of the cycle. It's what's going to happen. You're not going to get away from it. And so let's focus in on living the best that we can in this physical existence, And then when the time comes, honoring the transition that occurs.
Mm-hmm. Now, the second question I have, I had to go back and look this up because it was something that Matthew had found for the episode we did on World AIDS Day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a section from the book Two Flutes Playing, which is by the author
mm-hmm.
Andrew Kramer, who is going to be the keynote speaker for Stone and Sang this year.
Yes, he is.
Which will be in California, and I cannot think of the date. What is the date? I'm looking it up real quick. It is going to be October 5th through the 8th.
Yes.
And you can get more information about Stern and Stang at www.sternandstang.com. But the thing that Matthew found was a section from the book where Andrew Rimmer was talking about HIV and AIDS. Andrew Rimmer wrote, AIDS is a planetary experiment. The planet, the virus, and the people who contract the virus are participants. Nature of the experiment is twofold. To raise compassion and transformation, and to be a doorway to possible future. If change does not occur, then AIDS is just a foreshadowing of a more serious virus that will, by or around the year 2054, cause 50% of all children to die before the age of 5. If that experiment fails to transform human consciousness, then the human species may be terminated by the planet's biosphere. Freedom of identity, food, housing, clothing, education. Sorry, I should have copied and pasted it a little bit better. But what, you know, as someone who is a teacher of the Ending Path, and you know, this is a book that we, you know, have people read when they go through initiation or when they ask about the path. What are your thoughts on that passage?
Well, I think that there is some value in what is said there in terms of how HIV, how we as men who love men treat folks, and how we are treated, and how, you know, aspects of compassion and love, and that, you know, there's a test of what is our innate value of each other and of ourselves in how we treat each other, especially during situations of where there is stress and illness and harm. Do we reach out to those folks, and do we say, I am here for you? Or do we pull back and say, I am not going to be there for you because I have to focus in on who and what I am, and I have to worry about the me versus the we. You know, death, fear of death, is something that is a common driving factor in our lives. We people generally don't do things that put them in harm's way knowingly on a regular basis. Although if you think about it, we put ourselves in harm's way every day by just walking out the door. So yes, do we have an opportunity to step up and say that our community regardless of their physical, medical, spiritual, emotional condition is valuable, and we're going to be here for each other. I think this is a, you know, if we want to get kind of big picture around it, I think this is a question that our entire country is going through at this time. That we are told, and we are led to believe by leaders or so-called leaders that you know, it has to be us first and everyone else second. And you know, what does that do to community? What does it do to society? What does that do to our own feelings of, I mean, if we're constantly degrading other people just to make ourselves feel better, then are we truly feeling better? Are we truly standing in our own selves and valuing our own authenticity? Are we letting our ego self rise up and conquer or seemingly conquer who we are at an authentic level? So, yes, does HIV present an opportunity for us to sit in our compassion, to become a people that will become empowered? Yes. If we don't do that, will it be the end of the world? Well, if we continue on the path that we are on, then I would say yes. But I have hope. I have hope that because I've seen it in place, I've seen people during great times of tragedy step up. I'm inspired by the amazing work that the people from the kids that are standing on stages across the country today trying to address another public health crisis. I've seen it happen by the people who laid in the streets to fight up with ACT UP to say that my friends, my family, that the people on this planet are valuable, and I need to stand up and say something in support of them and do something to keep them alive, because as I said before, we're only on here for a limited period of time, and if we are simply focused in on our own selves, it becomes very lonely, it becomes very isolated. And this community that we're connected with, you know, it's important. I would say to anyone who is listening to this, who has questions about what they can do even today to help those with HIV/AIDS, is just reach out to someone, build a connection, build a relationship. You're going a long way to lengthening and strengthening the bonds of humanity and the bonds of our society.
Yeah. Thank you, there. Do you have any questions? Any last-minute questions or a comment on the passage that David just commented on?
Me or David?
You, Jake.
You.
I don't really, I don't really have any more commentary around that, other than it's given me a lot of food for thought on the things that you've talked about, just in the different ways and perspectives that you have on some of this stuff, that I've either never thought about before or never had to think about before. And I think that it's wonderful to have people who are willing to talk about things like this
that may cause other people such shame or, you know, guilt. Because by talking about it more, I think we're helping to eradicate some of that shame.
Thank you. I do want to, I said earlier that I'd want to provide a resource for connecting with me. I'm going to go ahead and give my phone number. I have enough telemarketing calls. I don't mind other calls either. So my phone number is area code 916-801-2519. You can call or text. Or if you want, you can also email me at drshorey, it's S-H-O-R-E-Y, at gmail.com.
Oh, thank you, David, so much for, you know, being on the show and being willing to be so open with us about this topic.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and I'm very, very happy to be here.
So I'm going to go ahead and play us out with a song, and then I will come back and give our closing notes. So thank you, everyone, for listening today. And you know, if you're listening to this in the archives, I hope you enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you learned something. Or I hope it opened your mind to some ideas that you didn't have before. So I'm going to go ahead and play S.J. Tucker, Firebird's Child.
I am the Firebird. I am his daughter. I am the Firebird's child.
I am the Firebird's child.
I am the Firebird. I am his daughter. And like the flame, I am wild, 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 wild. I am the Firebird. I am his daughter. Ever heard? Join in the dance and make it wild, wild, wild. Join in the dance and make it wild. To see a maiden dance around the fire is not so strange, but fire dances around the limbs of this uncommon maid. Be brave enough to burn and you'll be brave enough to fly. Join your sister Solace as she lights the morning sky. I am a firebird. I am his daughter. I am the firebird.
Thank you, everyone. That was S.J. Tucker, Fibers Child. You know, I kind of felt like we needed something to get everyone kind of moving, because that was a very intense episode. It's lots of amazing information that we got from our brother David. And if you have any comments or questions about today's show, or anything you'd like, you know, if you have any topics you'd like for us to cover, please get in touch with us at our email account, walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. Again, you can follow us on Twitter at walking_DUP, or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. And, you know, thank you, Chase, again, for being my special guest, well, my special co-host while Matthew is away. I think he's there, maybe.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. And, you know, word. we already have, yes, we already have our next show planned and lined up. We are going to be talking about relationships, particularly in the, I guess, the queer pagan community, different relationship types and dynamics, from monogamous to poly to open-ish. We're going to have a roundtable discussion with two of our brothers, our brother Cliff, who has been on the show before, and one of our recently new brothers, Robbie, who has not been on the show, and I really haven't had much time to talk to him myself. So that is going to be a fun show, and that's going to be our 40th episode. Wow, that I didn't think we were up to that many. But the date for that one is, because we have an extra week in this month, I believe. So it's going to be a couple of weeks before we are back. Our next episode will be April 14th, and that will be when we are having Cliff and Robbie on to talk about relationships. So we hope you'll join us that day. You know, we'll try to share some stuff between now and then, articles and stuff on our Facebook page. So, you know, go check us out, give us a like. And if you feel like it, give us a review, because I think there is a review section. But thank you all for listening, and I hope you have a magical rest of your weekend, and I hope you have a good next few weeks. Right. Blessings, and bye.